Moncrief on News Talk.
Answer it within five rings. Remember exactly the amount of money I said there, and we will give it to you. Obviously, winning a huge amount of money like that, you will require some sort of advice. And you've come to the right place.
Oh, you did.
But yes. Barbara and Declan are here once again. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello.
We
there.
Don't
How
give financial
you?
Advice, though, because yeah. we like to keep the financials for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we could do a stuff for the right money. We could give financial advice to him, obviously.
Yeah.
God's sake.
Absolutely.
Be expensive advice, but we could give it.
Yeah, okay. I live with one of my best friends. We rent an apartment together and have been doing so now for about a year and a half. My friend moved in after he'd broken up with his girlfriend of 10 years. My friend spent a lot of the first year recovering emotionally. Everyone, including him, had been expecting that wedding bells were on the way. So to say he was devastated is an understatement. In some ways, though, it was a lovely time because we got to spend a lot of time together and he really was an ideal housemate. Recently, though, it's begun to get a bit uncomfortable. He's rediscovered his confidence, is on something of a mission to sow his wild oats, having missed the end of his teens and most of his 20s as he sees it. Good for him, but he's at it every second night pretty much. He comes back with some random woman late at night and they have very, very loud sex. He's working in a bar, so he doesn't have to get up to work like I do, and he's robbing me of at least a couple of hours of sleep every second night. I did confront him in as diplomatic way as I could. He just said, in fairness, mate, when I'm having sex, the last thing I'm thinking about is you. So he is thinking about you, though, and then laughed. I get that. I do. I don't want to be a prude, and I'm happy to see him enjoying life again. But it's been really stressful for me, and my performance at work is dipping. I'm just not sure how to address this.
Oh, God. I mean, the first thing I want to say is this is what did he say there at the end? Is he being a prude and he's not sure how to address it? Like, this has got nothing to do really with the loud sex.
No.
This has got to do with his sleep being disturbed through his friend making a lot of noise, and whether he's making that noise because he's having sex or he's making that noise because he's playing music very loud or having his mates in to have a few beers and they're sitting up at 4 a.m. chatting and laughing and whatever else, it's all the same thing. So the problem is that he's being robbed of sleep that he needs in order to get up and go to work, so he needs to drop the whole kind of reluctance that he has around addressing this because it's sex that's causing him the problem. Forget that. It's noise that's causing you the problem. And therefore, he is perfectly entitled to say to his mate, listen, like, I don't care. Because, I mean, he shouldn't care. I presume he doesn't care whether his mate's having sex every night of the week or not with as many women as he wants to have sex with.
As long as he's not washing his sheets, then it's, you know, it's fine.
What?
As long as he's not having to wash his sheets, it's fine.
The mate is having to wash the sheets.
Yeah, I know. You get what I say.
Right. Okay, cool. You put me off now on a whole other tangent now thinking. But anyway, the problem is he needs to get over his reluctance to address this and he needs to be able to say to his mate, you're making too much noise. You need to dial it down. You know, having sex is fine or whatever you're doing is fine, but please dial down on the noise. I need to sleep. And that's perfectly reasonable and that shouldn't be an issue. Is that the issue, though?
Oh.
Well, it only dawned on me when you read it again, when he said it was a lovely time and they spent time together. That's you're picking up on that, right?
Well, no, I only did when you read it. The way you read it.
I had a tinge of romance. It's a question, yes.
I'm thinking, wow, that kind of, wow, yeah. So maybe there's actually kind of, you know, the whole, the last thing I'm doing right now is thinking of you while I'm making really loud noise so you can hear me having sex next door.
Oh.
Look at you, Barbara.
Oh. Wow, this is so weird. Now this is a weird. That's a strange French movie we're into territory like into now.
Performance.
Do you think that's a possibility?
I'm actually being funny about it, but I actually do think that being funny about it is actually kind of at the core of the solution to this issue. Because I think, you know, what I agree with you. That the secondhand embarrassment around the sex topic can sometimes stop people from bringing topics up and all that kind of stuff. I feel like the other guy, the guy in the room who's making the noise, knows that and is kind of using that to his advantage. It's a kind of a great way to stop a complaint right in its track. So the grievance here is, as you've already pointed out, is being disturbed while you're trying to live your own private life. But the way it's being presented is that I'm just, you know, a lad, you know, sowing my wild oats, getting over a breakup, and I'm just doing what guys do. You need to chill out and get back in your box. You're being a bit of a granny about the whole thing and all that kind of stuff. Now, that's a really good way of countering a grievance, yeah, because what you're doing is you're taking the topic and you're making it about what you want to make it about. But the reality of it is the answer then is to make it about what you want to make it about for yourself against that. What I'm trying to say is framing the grievance is just as important as having the grievance. Coming at somebody and going, like, I know you're saying that you're not doing it so that I can hear you, but actually I'm starting to think that you are doing it so I can hear you.
What is and his motivation?
And it's given small dick energy is what I would say. Oh. I would say you're giving off kind of like, I need to prove to somebody that's not myself that I'm living the life, and it's just not.
He needs a witness. He needs our correspondent to go out and tell the world.
Do you want me to tell everybody that you're okay? Because you're giving me that you're not okay, and the consequence of that is I'm getting a bad impression of you, and also you're stopping me from sleeping.
But
and
that's
if you
think it's all point. Funny, everything else is
but it's also about the way it's handled, the humor, the kind of the bravado, the kind of dismissive. All that stuff is just as important as
but
the actual agreement.
That is why the guy who lives at the flat first, why he has to just say, look, I don't care what you're doing, how you're doing it, how long you're doing it for, and who you're doing it with.
Yeah.
Just be quieter. End of story.
Yes. And then the response to that is always going to be, you know, if somebody's going to bring bravado into it, it's always going to be, you need to relax.
Yeah, no, I am trying to relax. That's the whole point. Relax. I need to sleep. I've got to get up and go to work.
That doesn't ever go anywhere,
well,
though.
Then I'd give him his walking papers.
He's
going to be that. Then I'd give him his walking papers. I'd tell him he has a month to move because I can't.
People have, let's just say, looking at it on face value, other than the multiple subtext that could be going on there, maybe our man's just default sex style is noise.
But it doesn't matter. He's living in a shared apartment.
Oh, absolutely. In effect, if he's saying you can have as much sex as you like, but be quiet about it, he's unable to do that. So that really means don't have sex anymore.
But what do you mean he's not able to do that? Of course he is. He chooses.
Some people are funny that way.
Stop. He chooses to roar and shout.
You're trying to make it about sex again, Sean. But the reality of this, this is about shared living.
For instance, somebody texting to say, who's making the noise, though? Assuming it's a heterosexual type situation, I personally feel it's okay for the woman to make a lot of noise. But if it's the dude making noise, then it's a bit weird.
Okay, weird rules. Yeah. I mean, that's also a weird,
strange one. That kind of feeds into what I was kind of wondering, which was probably completely out there, is do they actually fancy each other, these two guys? Is that part of the issue?
Well, you know, boys who like girls, whatever it is, it could be that there's, you know, maybe there is, maybe there's not, but that's still not the point. The point is that on the bona fides of his argument.
No, but is that why a man is making so much noise?
Because isn't that at the core of it, is why does it bother you? Why are you doing it? Why does it bother you?
It bother me is very straightforward. I need to go to sleep at night so I can get up in the morning to go to work. Yeah. That's why it bothers me.
His effects is performance at work. It's just the word performance. Left out of me there.
Oh, God.
But like, it's full of Freudian slips.
It's very stressful. Tell him you love him. Yeah, that's
But then he's giving off like kind of needy energy and he needs
He should record a few of his friends' noisy sex sessions, put them up on YouTube, and then send him the link.
Oh no, that's not allowed.
Well, no, because I was thinking about when by being dismissive and saying that this is not a big deal, you need to chill out about your complaint. What that actually has also done is it's given the person with the grievance the permission to act like the whole thing is worthy of discussing, because it can't be a private issue. So he's given him permission, kind of in a very tenuous way. To do that. I think, though, in front of the other guys going, your man, you know, trying to prove to the world that he's, you know, Mr. Lover Man and all that kind of, that's how you handle it. Because you can either handle it rationally with an argument, present your grievance, present the reasons why it's rational for a certain course of action, and then, you know, counter any objections that are made. Or, as lads often do, is handle the whole thing with a bit of kind of humour and a bit of, you know, psycho manipulation. And cruelty.
I don't know about that. I'm not a lad, so I don't know if that would work.
Neither am I, Barbara. I'm just imagining. I've seen it on the television.
Well, somebody else says it's true. Life is too short to be worrying about other people when you're finally getting some.
That's from him.
Probably that's from him. Yeah, the flatmate. Someone else says,
I reckon that's from
sleep
the flatmate.
With earplugs in. Yeah. Third, really helpful suggestion this. Tell your manager about the reason for your sleep issues. Managers are very understanding.
What?
Now, that's, you know, the layers of this scenario.
I don't think they listen to all of that problem.
So we have absolutely no advice to give this guy.
Tell him he loves him.
Yeah, this is homoerotic tension.
Yeah,
sorry
exactly,
about that.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I've been dating a woman for about a month. She's almost perfect to the point that I spent the first 2 dates wondering what the catch was. She's stunning, smart, funny and successful. She's a really impressive person and we get on incredibly well considering we've only met a handful of times. The problem is, there is a catch. On the third date, we know that. That's what you wrote into us. On the third date, we kissed for the first time and that was when I noticed that she has really, really bad breath. It's a serious turnoff. I find myself almost avoiding kissing at this stage, but this is a superficial thing and we got on so well that I feel like it would be totally mad to end it over something like this. She seems to be completely oblivious to it too, so I find myself wondering if it's just a recent thing brought on by an infection or something. How could she have gone through her whole life without anyone saying something otherwise? Anyway, I don't want to ruin what seems to be an amazing opportunity for a happy relationship for me and for her, so how do I go about telling her without risking ending the relationship before it's really begun?
Yeah, you know, these kind of ones are interesting because the kind of nature of the problem seems kind of frivolous, but actually really you can see
it's a deal
it's
breaker.
It's a deal breaker. It's kind of a turn off and being turned on is kind of central to you know, romantic relationships. So from that point of view, you can't control what turns you off about somebody else, but sometimes they can control whatever that may be.
Yes.
If it's body odor or, you know, general sense of hygiene, and if it's bad breath and stuff like that. Is there a scenario whereby you're meeting this person after that, you know, you've been out for dinner? Or is there something happening there that you're always meeting this person in the same situation where they're just not aware of the fact that they've got?
But that's garlic breath as opposed to bad breath.
But people react differently to scents and stuff like that. So one person's garlic breath is a kind of a turn on, whereas, you know, it's kind of rushed me.
Flashback to heady days romancing in Spain. Sorry, go on.
It depends if you like garlic. Garlic breath is fabulous.
And it's also about associations and all that kind of stuff. Look, the reality of this is that if you really like somebody and you present them with a thing that you think is going to help them in some way, and you do it with love and you do it with care, then most of the time...
It's very early doors, though, isn't it?
To go up to somebody you got bad breath.
Yeah. It's very early doors.
So, but the thing about it is that this is the thing. You either are going to go, she's rotten and she's got horrible breath, see you later, love. Yeah. Or you're going to go, you know, I'm going to change her early, change her now, some people just don't know that they have body odor and they don't know they have, maybe she did have an infection. I don't know what's going on really, but I do think that there is a case for, again, it doesn't have to be, not all of these conversations need to be a literal kind of, I'm going to tell you something that's going to help you or change your life. But you can bring something up without bringing it up.
Yeah, what I was going to say, because I think like what you said, bad breath is a kind of deal breaker, you know what I mean? It really is. Yeah. It's not great. But if she's fab in every way, the usual cause, I think, and obviously I'm not
stress.
You'll be all surprised to hear I'm not a dentist or a doctor, but I think that bad breath very often comes from bacteria in your mouth or gum disease. So if I was him, I would start by having a conversation about the dentist. In other words, inventing like, oh my God, I was at the dentist today and I've been terrified of the dentist for years and I hate going and I have to take a Xanax before I go into the dentist. But I went in because I had to go to the hygienist and to try and get her, do you like the dentist? Do you mind the dentist? That was really easy, certainly with my generation, where most of us were traumatized in the 60s and 70s by going to dentists here and having dreadful times. But that's where I would start, without pointing out, love, your breath really stinks and you need to do something about it. I think the chances are, if she's going to the dentist regularly, it should sort it out.
Right.
That is the most common cause of bad breath.
And I think that sometimes people, when they think about these kind of parallel conversations or implied topics that they're kind of scared of being caught out in what the hidden subtext of the conversation is. But in these instances, you actually want the subtext to be read.
You want
them to catch you out, and you want them to realize, oh, he's actually telling me I need to go to the dentist. Yeah. And again, that leads back to what I was saying earlier on, is that if it's done with care and love and it's done for the right reasons, even if they do catch the actual topic, they should recognize, the other person should recognize that what you're doing is you're trying to hint at somebody a way.
It is amazing though. Like, I mean, he did say in the letter, how could she have gone through her whole life without anybody saying anything? Do you know what I mean? If this is something she's had for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, most of us would have a friend that would go, that's not a good idea. Mm. Not all of us, but most of us would have a friend to say, that's not a great idea. You shouldn't do that.
Right.
You should go to the dentist. You should not go to the dentist.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So maybe it's a more recent thing then.
Maybe it could be, it could be. And that would be the reason why, maybe if she doesn't realise it, but if she doesn't go to the dentist, she should go to the dentist. She should definitely go to the dentist. That's her first port of call.
Mm. Yeah, again, but as you pointed out, is that she doesn't realise it's happening. And it's more likely that she's not going to the dentist if that's the problem, because the dentist would automatically know. Like, it could be, it might be dental, it could be
crisis. I get that. I mean, I'm always saying this to my girls. It's up to you guys now to go to the dentist regularly and have your teeth checked regularly before you've got a problem. But, you know, when you're telling them to go down and spend 80 and 90 euros for a checkup, they're kind of like, no. I'll wait till I have a problem. And that might be
And
what's
that's the sure
here.
Path to having a problem, I think, you know. I regret not handling my teeth better when I was younger, because all I want now with them, editing it into old age, is to make sure they stay in my head.
Didn't go to the dentist for years, right? Because I was terrified. Haven't had a bad experience. And I must have been early 30s when I finally had to go to the dentist, having not been there since I was probably about 13. And I went into the dentist. I was with him again recently and I was reminding him of this. I was 31, 32. And he said to me, your teeth are actually okay, but you've got the gums of a 70-year-old.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Great.
I lost loads of teeth as a result, but I go to the dentist now every 4 months.
Yeah, and again, you know, just in case it's not just about dentists, that this bad breath can be because of, you know, stuff happening in your gut. Yeah. Because loads of reasons why. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, I do think that this guy needs to hint at his girlfriend. Otherwise, she's not going to be his girlfriend.
No, you can't keep that up, no.
Yeah.
Unless you just abandon kissing.
It's like fighting your way through the fog.
Yeah.
Unless you say, we're not kissing anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't like kissing.
Boots do a toothpaste and mouthwash called Ultradex that will sort that out, says Steve. But, yeah, what are you going to do? Bring it to their next date?
Yeah.
People keep giving it to them.
Yeah.
The guy could watch a YouTube video on bad breath with her and say that he is trying to improve his breath without offending her. Casually start talking about flossing. Bad breath can be rotting food trapped between teeth.
Yeah.
Say something like, wow, you have such great teeth. Do you floss?
Get a water flosser. A water flosser is kind of like...
High pressure.
Yeah. I mean, I love them. They're really, really...
What do you do with it?
Well, there you go, Barbara. That was my point I was making. You know, I don't know what this is for. Let's have some water floss and fun.
You might have to disinfect it afterwards. When you're moving in for the smooch, whip out the minty spray. Spray yourself first, then offer her a spray. Repeat until she gets the hint. Why not drop a subtle hint by buying her a lifetime supply of breath fresheners as a gift? Listeners, you'd be in no use
help.
Whatsoever.
Yeah. No help
you
at
have,
all.
You have killed that relationship before it was born, I'm afraid. Right. Not really being that useful today. I must encourage listeners to send in more dental related questions.
So we can learn.
The two of you have become so animated on the subject.
Oh, did we?
I've actually braces in my teeth at the moment.
You do,
And I'm actually very dental focused at the moment.
I had three fillings last week. Can I just tell everybody three?
Okay, three.
He said they were bondings. And I said, what's that? Is that not a filling? And
Bond villains.
Yes, it is a filling, but we call them now bondings.
Oh,
okay. Oh.
So I was like, okay. They weren't very expensive though, so I don't think they were very deep fillings. I think they were. But I was very proud of myself. Yeah. I still am like a 10-year-old coming out of the dentist, delighted with myself.
Actually, Anya says Betsy's on a really weird and wacky diet.
Oh,
so that she stays
Dr.
stunning.
Atkins diet.
And that's fecked up her breath. Remember Atkins.
Oh. Yeah, actually.
That's a good one. And that's a hard breath. One to prize out
yeah,
of her.
That is, yeah.
When's she going to tell him that?
You should be able to pick that up if you go out for dinner enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? If she's not eating properly,
bring her to a dirty burger place and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. A big slap up Indian meal or something like that.
Okay, we're an Irish family living in England. Our father passed away 10 days ago. We are currently preparing for his funeral in about 2 weeks' time. Crikey.
God bless the Brits.
My three siblings and I are keen to have a wonderful celebration of our dad's life. He was a good age and loved his life, a big family man with a super sense of humour. We were all very fond of him. However, the question over who gets to do the eulogy has become a point of contention over the past few days. My eldest brother seems to presume it would be him, until I suggested that the position required some discussion. This ruffled the feathers. I myself am the youngest, and I feel like I'm in an ideal position to do the speech. Dad always called me his baby. But my two sisters are now also claiming they have a unique outlook to take on the role, because they worked with him in his business. It's got to the point that almost everything is organised for the funeral, but we can't decide on the eulogy. No one is willing to split it and do two shorter speeches, as this isn't the tradition in our family. It's causing my rather frail mam a lot of angst, to be honest. How do we reconcile this situation?
Okay, first of all, sorry for your loss. Your dad sounds great, and losing one of your parents is always really difficult. And I mean, my husband lost his father a month or more ago, and like the wait for 3 weeks in England to have to go to a funeral is bizarre. But anyway. Having said that, this letter made me kind of cross, because I thought, like, there are times in families where you really have to choose your battles.
Yeah.
And this is not something that should be a battle. It is one of those cases where the easiest... First of all, it's unusual that everybody wants to do the eulogy, because it's very hard to do a eulogy. It's very hard to write a good eulogy, and it's very hard to deliver a eulogy if it's obviously it would be for somebody that you were very close to and that you loved. So it's unusual that you all want to do it. But the point is, the only point in this is that you are upsetting your mother, who is frail and who is also dealing with the loss of her husband. And that alone should be the main point here.
Mm.
And in order not to upset your mother, I would, in this instance, defer to let the eldest do it.
Yeah.
If he wants to do it, you let him do it. Now, I know in our family, me being the eldest, suited me.
Yeah.
Give me a stage. But my brothers all had an input in, do you know what I mean?
Sure,
and they had to approve it. They had to see it and approve it before it was delivered. And I think that's fair enough. But fighting over who's going to do it and deciding you're all going to get up one after the other and do a bit, which is going to be ridiculous, is not an option. And I think in this case, I would be very firm. You let your eldest brother do it. Have a look at what he's going to deliver. If you want to make some changes, I'm sure he'd be open to that. But stand back and don't be upsetting your mother.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, it is. It's about motivation. Like, maybe look at yourself and ask yourself why you want to be the one that's going to stand up in front of the room. You talked about family tradition. Is it family tradition that you...
Like, how many people have died that they have this family tradition?
That you go, but it's like, you know what I mean, people die all the time. But you go, there's one person doing the eulogy, that's family tradition. Well, who has that one person been? Has that person been the oldest child? In which case, then, you know, going on tradition, there you go. Yeah. Your answer is in the traditions. But I do wonder about, like, you know, the eulogy thing. You know, if everybody wants to do the eulogy, do you actually just let everybody have a go? Because sometimes that would be the solution that people would come up with. Personally, as you know, a member of the audience of a funeral, I would hate that, because it just means that you're overwhelmed by the whole thing, whether you're moved or whether you're frankly bored by the whole situation. It just makes the whole thing quite long and intense. I think sometimes when it comes to the topic that people are I can hear clapping.
Yeah, somebody's giving us a round of applause.
Oh yeah, they're clapping us out of the studio. I think sometimes with the topic of eulogies, I think that when people are giving them, they don't think about what they're actually for. Mm-hmm. And as you pointed out, it's actually meant to be commemorating your father and the role that he played in the family.
Yeah.
And if you can't all agree what's going to be in the eulogy.
I presume, I don't know, but if they're having a, I don't know, But
I think it's more about the dynamic of the family.
But I mean, if you're having a Catholic funeral, there are other ways in which you can get involved, you know, and being standing up and saying your bit. I mean, we wrote all our own prayers of the faithful. That can be something that somebody can do. Or obviously there's readings if it's a Catholic funeral or a church funeral. If it's not, then, you know, maybe somebody else read a poem or read something or whatever. But you don't.
I'm just getting off
Jesus too much.
I'm getting the feeling from this, and forgive me if I'm completely wrong here, that this is not about the dearly departed dad at all. This is not about the actual core, you know, objective of a eulogy.
Yeah.
This is a bit of like inter-sibling kind of rivalry.
And it is a bit.
And nobody puts baby in the corner.
Yeah.
Baby. You know, not now. This is not the time. This is not the, it's not the only way.
It usually is the eldest.
It usually is,
yeah. Unless the eldest doesn't want to do it for some reason.
Yeah, and that's often the case as well. You pass it over to somebody.
No, I mean, there's another, like, I mean, they can do readings, but oftentimes it's like, you know, grandkids or whatever do readings. But I mean, there's another slot that somebody can do the eulogy. Somebody else can do the, you know, at the end where they do the thanks to, you know, they do the Oscar speech. But like that can be a kind of a mini eulogy as well, as long as they coordinate about who says what.
Maybe,
So there's probably, you're right, they can be imaginative.
They can be a bit imaginative, but I mean, this tussling for space of being the top dog, if you like, you know what I mean? I'm the one delivering the eulogy because daddy used to call me his baby. Like, I mean, please. That's ridiculous. And I mean, the only line in that that's of any importance is the fact that it's causing your frail mother a lot of angst.
Yeah.
So stop doing that.
John suggests they just draw lots. That's very respectful. Don't have any eulogy. They are tedious for the congregation anyway, and no one likes them. Well, not unless that's not true. If they knew the person, they're there to kind of commemorate them as well.
And actually, a good eulogy can really inject...
absolutely.
You know, a lot of us go to funerals of people we don't know the person. We're there because we knew their son or their daughter or whatever. Yeah. You don't know the person. And a eulogy can give you a really good sense of who that person was. If it's a good eulogy.
Yeah.
I think it can. I think it's really important.
Give me a eulogy over a wedding speech any day.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Any day.
Well, give me a funeral over a wedding any day.
Oh, I agree.
Much better.
Fun. That's because a funeral speech has a beginning, a middle and an end.
Yeah. Well, marriages often have ends. That's probably not a good time to bring it up. I was at a funeral and the siblings did their happiest memory of the person. It was 30 seconds long and it was absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Siobhan says, when my sister passed away, we three remaining wrote the eulogy and a brother-in-law spoke. The sentiment was what we wanted and we were all happy.
Okay,
so that's why you're doing it. And back to Bad Breath Girl. There was a girl in work once that stank. A horrible, sickly, rotten, fruity stench. I put up with it for a month until I couldn't handle a headache anymore. So I confronted her on it and she didn't realise. She went to the GP and was diagnosed with a form of cancer.
Oh, my God.
So get her to a dentist. You never know, says David.
Holy God.
God, that's a grim way.
Dogs can save lives.
They can actually. They can smell.
Dogs can smell.
They can train them to smell cancer. Yeah, or certain sorts anyway.
Yeah. That was in that film I was recommending last week, The Art of Racing in the Rain.
Right.
The dog smelt the wife's cancer.
Okay. Right. Wow. There you go.
I hope that's not a spoiler.
No. Okay, more dental-related questions next week, afternoon at newstalk.com. If you'd like to send them in, Barbara and Declan, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on Newstalk.